For too many of us, it's become safer to retreat into our own bubbles, whether in our neighborhoods or on college campuses or places of worship, or especially our social media feeds. Surrounded by people who look like us and share the same political outlook and never challenge our assumptions. And increasingly, we become so secure in our bubbles that we start accepting only information, whether it's true or not, that fits our opinions, instead of basing our opinions on the evidence that is out there. In the course of a healthy debate, we prioritize different goals and the different means of reaching them. But without some common baseline of facts, without a willingness to admit new information and concede that your opponent might be making a fair point, if you're tired of arguing with strangers on the internet, try talking with one of them in real life.
It'd be too easy to talk about nothing, to talk about nothing. Be too easy to talk like I'm something. I'm balling, I'm stunting. Be too easy chasing the fame, playing the game. It'll be too easy. But tell them we don't feel that. No, no, tell them we don't feel that.
Well, hey, everybody. Thanks so much for tuning in to another episode of Leading Questions with Calvin Moore. I am your host, Calvin Moore, and per usual, I am here with my co-host, Kent Strait. What's up, Kent?
Pulling a double today.
Pulling a double, yes. Yeah. So this is actually a special episode. We don't do a lot of special episodes.
Wearing flannel.
Who's wearing flannel?
I'm wearing flannel. I'm wearing jeans. I'm doing the working man's duty. I'm pulling a double shift, yo.
And Kent's actually wearing a suit jacket.
Yep.
And a button-up, a blue button-up.
Yep.
Would you consider that a blazer?
This would be a blazer? It's the top half of a suit and an Oxford shirt.
But an Oxford shirt, okay.
Yeah, see.
Got the Oxford collar.
That's the magic of radio.
Okay, well, that makes it, yeah. I am wearing my pajama. I am wearing
pajamas?
I am wearing a Chewbacca onesie, as a matter of fact, since we're just lying. speaking of lying, we're going to talk about a lot of lying today. Anyhow, so this is our State of the Union special, State of the Union 2018. It was President Trump's first State of the Union address, and I think the biggest bet going in was whether he would speak in complete sentences or not.
Right.
And he was surprisingly impressive.
How is it – now, I get it. I mean, I get it. How is it that this was the first State of the Union? I get that it's the first State of the Union, that there's no State of the Union delivered in – a year in which there is also an inaugural address. Here's the thing. A few weeks after the inaugural address last year, the president gave a nationally televised speech to a joint session of Congress, which had Paul Ryan and Mike Pence sitting behind him, had all of Congress, the Supreme Court, the cabinet in attendance. It was on every channel, and it opened with the sergeant at arms yelling, "Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States." Everybody gets up and applauds, and then he speaks for 70 minutes, and then he stops, and then people dissect what it said. And it looked like a State of the Union to me.
But it was not.
Right.
Officially the State of the Union.
Sure. That's fine.
So I think he wanted to do that last year.
Yeah.
I think he wanted to just kind of hit the ground running. That's what I thought. I was remembering that.
Donald Trump ran anywhere.
I was not misremembering that.
Nope, that happened.
Okay, all right. I was like, wait a minute. So no State of the Union, generally speaking, in the inaugural year. He's now out of his first year. I watched it, and Kent, you watched it as well.
I did.
So what were your – did you also watch the response? There were five responses.
I watched the real one.
You watched the real one.
From
Joe Kennedy III.
Yep. JK3. Yeah.
What were your thoughts on – I mean, just your basic thoughts on State of the Union. How do you feel that Donald Trump did? And then we will kind of dissect the first year, his accomplishments, and then we'll kind of go bit by bit on some of the things that he said.
See, here's the thing. One, I like the State of the Union. I like the State of the Union very much.
Are you saying you like the State of the Union address, or you like the State of our Union?
Oh, no, the second one.
Okay.
Oh, the second one. No. I like the pomp and the circumstance. I like the look and the feel and the importance and the pageantry. It is impossible to judge what President Trump did last night on a scale with any other president, in that we had a run of – I was going to say of 45 people to give State of the Union addresses, but really that's not true. I think they've been doing it live in front of Congress since like Harry Truman. You know? But it's a tradition with the an address to the joint session of Congress, and it's on TV, and it dates back, you know, 70 years. And last night was the first time – and, you know, in the case of George W. Bush, who had the reputation of not being the intellectual that Bill Clinton was, or that his father was, you know, the patrician elder statesman role, or the naturally gifted speaker that President Clinton was. George W. Bush, the bar was set lower for him. He was not as eloquent a speaker. He was subject to frequent malapropisms. And so people talked about, you know, we're going to keep your expectation, much like in the debates against John Kerry, when the Republicans did everything they could to make it clear that John Kerry was the best debater since Cicero. I mean, you know, it's you temper expectations. Last night, the expectations were, is this man going to crap his pants on TV? That's how low the bar was. It was like you go to the zoo every day and you walk by the cage every day where there is an aging, angry bonobo chimpanzee. And every day when you walk by the old, angry bonobo chimpanzee, he throws crap at you through the bars. Someday he hits you. Some days he hits you. Some days he doesn't. Last night, you walked by the cage, and it's like, you know what? Nobody threw any feces at me. What a raging success this trip to the zoo has been.
Are his thumbs opposable now?
Right. He can hold a pen. So, judged against any president of my entire lifetime, the speech was awful. It was awful in that I don't know how a man reaches 71 years of age, and even if he's not a real billionaire, and however many hundreds of millions of dollars he has, he sounds like he has – my niece, who was in here for our Christmas episode, is 10 and a half years old and reads approximately as well as the president of the United States. He sounds like he has a fifth grade reading level. That being the case, if that's where the expectations are, it was great.
Okay.
It was great. He didn't, to the best of my knowledge, mispronounce any words. He didn't
one. He did mispronounce. Did he? Yeah, he had a misstep, but then he
okay,
he corrected.
That's fine.
He corrected. Course, it wasn't like he was saying nuclear.
nuclear. And he didn't, as far as I know, start any wars. That being said, it was clear that he really wants to, but he didn't start any during the speech.
He's going to need one to get reelected.
So,
but
yeah.
Watching it, yeah, the bar was set low, and in a way, I feel kind of bad for the guy in that he is following one of the greatest orators in the modern era, Barack Obama, in terms of the presidency and giving the State of the Union address for what seven out of 8 years, right? I think that's a tough act to follow. As you said, the bar.
He's only given six,
huh?
He probably gave six State of the Unions because he had two inaugurals, but he also
true.
He also did give. There were like three of those speeches like last year with the joint session of Congress.
Yeah.
He gave a lot.
Yeah, and his farewell speech and the We Got 'Em speech, that was also good as well.
Yeah.
So a lot of that. And then, of course, prior to becoming president, he gave a lot of speeches. Either way, he set the bar of being an eloquent speaker. Same thing, obviously, Bill Clinton, Rhodes Scholar, able to string cogent sentences together.
You know, it doesn't help in that we're I understand what you're saying in that he you feel kind of bad for him in that he's directly following Barack Obama, who is certainly the 21st century's greatest living orator, at least in popular culture. And as kind of a double whammy, unlike George W. Bush, who has largely, you know, he pops up here and there, who has largely faded into retirement. Bill Clinton, for one reason or another, has never really left us and is constantly giving speeches. Now, because of hashtag Me Too, it's probable that we've heard Bill Clinton speak at a convention for the last time. But he's never gone away. And he's constantly, every year or two, reminding us that Bill Clinton brings the thunder from the podium, right? What a great speaker he is. And that is missing.
Yeah. That being said, I didn't feel like it was a bad speech. I did not feel like it was a great speech. And in this respect, because he's following Barack Obama, because he's following better speakers historically, I'm trying to compare Trump to Trump at this point. I feel like that's the most fair thing to do. And I don't feel like he did a bad job. And you used the bonobo chimpanzee example.
Yeah.
But I mean, the fact of the matter is Donald Trump has been on television for years.
Sure.
He's made for TV. I watched The Apprentice in that first season and the Yofaya, and, you know, okay. I never got the sense that he was shy around the camera. I never got that idea.
No.
The shitting his pants thing, yeah, maybe in front of a Joint Chiefs of Staff where this matters. You know, firing Omarosa probably doesn't matter in the long
No.
You know, in the grand scheme of things.
Now he's done it twice,
I think. Twice? Three times? Didn't you come back?
No, he's only fired Omarosa from the White House once. He's fired her from The Apprentice.
I think twice.
Multiple times.
I think twice.
I have heard from people, and this is in no way definitive, because any Trump fan would say, oh, they're biased and they're just lying to you. I have heard from numerous insiders at Saturday Night Live, where he 2 years ago hosted the show during his campaign. And famously at Saturday Night Live, you have to read cue cards. And I have heard numerous people say that the entire show had to be reworked for someone who can barely read cue cards and cannot follow them.
That's sad.
So
let's talk a little bit about some of the things that he accomplished, at least according to the Washington Examiner, right? So take your source with a grain of salt here. At least I do.
Yep.
And it is, you know, just trying to research for this particular episode.
Yep.
Because we don't generally have episodes that are specifically about one political event. We will talk about political themes and hot button issues, but we don't talk about a specific event, and this is a specific event. And so he's coming in off of his first year, and so according to those who support him, some of his accomplishments in 2017 are as follows. 12 federal appeals court nominees have been confirmed.
Not sure that's an accomplishment, but okay.
So
I just mean
two accomplishments in air quotes,
sure,
here, because there's a lot more of these that you might go, okay, those are not accomplishments,
right?
Okay, but according to his base, these are considered
that
accomplishments.
Is an accomplishment, yes.
All right, so 12 federal appeals court nominees are confirmed. Neil Gorsuch was confirmed to Supreme Court of the United States. That is a win.
We're not counting that in the 12. Well, I guess those are federal appeals court.
Yeah,
okay, yeah.
Tax reform, tax overhaul. That's a win. Legislatively, that's his only legislative win,
that
if I'm not mistaken.
That is a legislative win. I don't have to tell you, but I mean, that is a legislative win for Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell.
Right.
The president had nothing to do with
Let's not parse every one of these.
Okay.
We're going to get into him taking credit for other people's stuff.
Yes.
Later on. But these are, again, according to his base, they're giving the win to him because he's the leader of their party.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Individual mandate for the Affordable Health Care Act was repealed.
That was in the tax bill.
Yeah, they've separated this out as an accomplishment. Deregulation, you know, a number of different industries, especially around the EPA, that's happening. I think day one he started trying to dismantle the EPA.
Especially an accomplishment if you like smoke.
Yes. Cutting government waste if a government department has like 15 processes, they're trying to get it cut down to two. I don't have a problem with trying to streamline things. The travel ban was, according to his base, a good thing. We need to vet these people coming in. We don't know whether, you know, we don't know whether they're terrorists or not. Those are obviously referring to the Muslim majority nations that we've addressed in several of our episodes here on our show. slowing down or defeating ISIS. That was actually a big part of his speech last night.
Yeah.
Some have said he's defeated ISIS. I don't think he's defeated ISIS. It's hard to defeat a nationless state.
The problem with saying defeated ISIS, and granted, he's our armed forces, be it – I'm sure it's the Army more so than the Marines or the Air Force. But, you know, but everybody helps. The Army has taken the number of active ISIS fighters down from about 50,000 to, last I heard, 1,500 active ISIS fighters and liberated nearly 100% of their territory. That is a decisive victory, and it may be the one thing – in this administration that I can give him credit for. And the one thing I can say about Obama that I was not a huge fan of is he was very reticent to use the necessary force sometimes with the Army.
For sure. I mean, he was also coming in. I mean, this isn't to defend Obama on this, but he was coming in after 8 years of fatigue, yep. War fatigue. He talked about pulling our troops out, whether there was a real exit strategy or not. There were people who were very critical of Obama. And, hey, how are you pulling people out without an act? Well, first, they were critical of Bush having our guys go in there with no exit strategy whatsoever. It just goes on for however long it goes on. Mm-hmm. Then Obama saying he's going to pull our troops out, which is, you know, signaling to the enemy, oh, they're leaving, whether yeah. they've won or not, because America's tired, and so we won. We wore them down. But under the Obama administration, he absolutely moved our troops off the ground and then started using drones. Mm-hmm. So there are more drone deaths under the Obama administration than I believe under any previous administration. But then again, drones didn't exist as much under previous administrations sure. either. But less – I don't think Americans are too upset about less soldiers being dead.
Right.
But when you have the boogeyman, the specter of Islamic extremism – coming and killing us here in the United States, when you know most deaths in the United States are gun violence and done at the hands of crazy white people, taking out ISIS is a win.
Yes.
Right, it's going to be a win.
Less ISIS, big win.
Yeah. Recognition of Jerusalem as Israel's capital.
Sure.
That's a win for his base. Again, we talked about that in our Sacred Spaces series. We were talking about, hey, you know what? That's where Jesus is coming back. So people are, you know, conservative Christians who are a lot of his base are very happy with Jerusalem being recognized as officially being recognized as the capital
to
politically.
To cover ground we've been over in a previous episode. Recognition of Jerusalem as the capital of Israel is a win for the base, and if I may be so bold, a win for objective reality. Jerusalem is the capital of Israel. Whether or not it's a good idea geopolitically is the subject of debate.
Right.
But, you know, it is what it is.
Withdrawal from the Paris Climate Agreement is another big one for his base sure. as well. That's seen as a victory. And then he reinstated the Mexico City policy. If you don't know what the Mexico City policy is, it's a policy that was signed in Mexico City, hence its name. And it basically just says that federal funding for abortions cannot you cannot use federal funding for abortions for NGOs and organizations that are outside of the United States. This is already the law in the United States. Right. This is now the case outside. Now, here's the deal. The Mexico City policy was signed into it became a policy under the Reagan administration, 1984, 84, 86, one of the two. I want to say it was 84.
Around the time Back to the Future was out.
Yeah, we'll and so it was on the books until, I want to say, 1993, when Clinton became president. He scaled it back, pulled it back, and then once Bush became president, he reinstated it.
Yep.
And then once Obama became president, he scaled it back, and now that Trump is president, he's reinitiated it. But so this is just kind of a back and forth between
Republican and Democrats.
It's not a big deal. However, a couple things on this. One, something that Trump did do when he reinstated this, he did expand the scope of the Mexico City policy. In reading this, though, he expanded the scope of it to all governmental bodies that work in any way, shape, or form abroad, right? So it applies to the Department of State, right? Which has nothing to do with abortions at all.
That we know of.
Yeah. And so, but it's applying to different organizations that operate abroad that in no way, shape, or form have anything to do with family planning or abortions or anything like that.
Yeah.
But it's considered a legislative victory because it expands. Now, the interesting thing about the Mexico City policy is whenever it is enacted, abortions go up.
Mm-hmm.
Abortions go up under this. So, again, we've talked about abortion on our show. You get a gold star for believing the right things, for putting this in place. He's getting a gold star amongst his base, even though, statistically speaking, whenever this policy is enacted, abortions go up. And now the main place that I read this is going to affect in a negative manner is in South Africa. Some of the NGOs working there legally, if they are offering you any kind of family planning service, have to legally tell you about abortion, and they have to tell you where you can get them legally in South Africa. Now, the Mexico City policy will not give you federal funding if you mention those things. And so this is going to bump up against the law in South Africa. So mm-hmm. this is kind of an interesting scenario that we're finding. But it's considered a legislative win amongst his – or it's considered a win. It's not a legislative win. It's considered a win because it's done by executive order by his base.
Let me just ask this, and I'll go on the record with this one thing. The fewer teenagers getting pregnant, the better. Okay, that's an uncontroversial stand. You've got a teenager, I'm sure you would agree, both on the specific and on the in the general sense.
Yes.
That being said, I do not for the life of me know what, because I went to a, maybe largely because I went to a Christian high school. I don't know what abstinence education is. I don't know what that means, because it seems like it would be a – I mean, it seems like you could handle – the subject of abstinence in roughly 2 or 3 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, it's essentially it's, hey, kids, do you want to get AIDS? Because sex is how you get AIDS.
Mm-hmm.
All right, moving on. And it was always the gym teacher. It was always the gym teacher who taught that. I don't understand that. You ever remember that that Wonder Years episode, the sex education episode, where they're showing the fallopian tubes and the kids think it looks like a cow head? Like the,
no,
the picture,
I watched Wonder Years sporadically.
It's probably the most famous episode of the Wonder Years. But yeah. So I'm not sure what abstinence-only education looks like either. But yeah, like you said, it could probably be covered in a few moments. But I'm sure it's putting into place certain safeguards, certain lesson plans.
Well, like under the Bush administration, I mean, that the to say the Bush doctrine, that means something else politically. The agenda.
Okay.
The agenda of the Bush administration was abstinence-only education in middle schools and high schools, and funding only those programs which talked about abstinence only. I don't know. How much does that cost?
I just looked it up. Okay. Abstinence-only marriage program. So 8 points real quick. One has as its exclusive purpose teaching the social, psychological, and health gains to be realized by abstaining from sexual activity. Now, here's the thing. These 8 things, there's nothing that I disagree with on here.
Sure.
Does it work is the question.
Yep.
Because, I mean, the fact of the matter is people believe kids are going to have sex.
Yep.
And to a degree, some kids have sex. I didn't. I didn't have sex until after I was out of high school.
Okay.
I went to a Christian school. This was taught to me. I didn't have sex. There was a lot of things I didn't know about sex either, though, which caused problems later on.
And then you met the Red Ranger.
I did. Okay. Teaches abstinence from sexual activity outside of marriage is the expected standard for all school-age children. Okay. Teaches that abstinence from sexual activity is the only certain way to avoid out-of-wedlock pregnancies, sexually transmitted diseases, and other associated health problems. Also true. Teaches that a mutually faithful monogamous relationship in the context of marriage is the expected standard of sexual activity. Teaches that sexual activity outside the context of marriage is likely to have harmful psychological and physical side effects. All psychological studies actually show that to be true. Teaches that bearing children out of wedlock is likely to have harmful consequences for the child, the child's parents, and society. Also true. Teaches young people how to reject sexual advances and how alcohol and drug use increase vulnerability to sexual advances. This is why you get a lot of that, why did you drink so much stuff, though, in rape culture, mm-hmm. right? Blaming women for their own rapes. But that's not untrue. Alcohol and drug use do increase vulnerability to sexual advances. when a girl is raped is not the right time to tell her that.
Nope.
Also, and then the last eight teaches the importance of attaining self-sufficiency before engaging in sexual activity. So there's nothing that I disagree with there. The problem is abstinence-only education in public education is a quantifiable and colossal failure.
Mm-hmm.
We have moved beyond these ideas philosophically and morally as a country. There's obviously religious underpinnings to this, even mm-hmm. if it's psychologically and scientifically accurate, right? The only way to keep from getting diseases is to abstain.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. You're not going to get diseases if you don't have sex. You know, you're not going to sexually transmitted diseases anyway, right, if you don't have sex. Don't share needles, things like that. Mm-hmm. So there's nothing I disagree with there, but it's been a colossal failure in basically every public school system that it's been introduced into. But that being said, let's talk about the State of the Union. I did not expect to go off on that tangent there,
sure,
about abstinence-only education. But there is something to abstinence-only education. Mm-hmm. It's not just a two-minute conversation.
Okay.
So some points that I found in just researching this. State of the Union by Donald Trump is the third longest State of the Union address in modern American history, as far as I understand. The only person to speak longer was President Clinton.
I'm sure it was. And it's funny that he had the third longest speech because his hands are so tiny.
Several special guests were in attendance, from soldiers to police officers, small business owners and their employees. There was a North Korean defector. And also a kid who placed flags on the graves of soldiers. So lots of different guests. Melania, the First Lady Melania Trump, arrived separately, breaking from tradition. There was some speculation as to
Shocker.
Why. There's some speculation as to why that happened, which I'm just not even going to talk about that. No, it'll come up at one point.
Sure.
State of the Union, primarily a message to his base.
Mm-hmm.
It was, some have said, he kind of strutted. Remember when we did our election of Donald Trump episode? There's a guest who we said could not come back on the show, Nathan
yes.
Liverman. We said he can come back in because when he walked in, he strut in.
Mm-hmm.
We do not strut and we do not preen. And that's what some of the commentators were saying about Donald Trump last night, is he was kind of strutting in despite having very few legislative victories
yeah.
To strut about. So most of it was a message to his base. Most of it was repeating stuff that he had said on the campaign trail. Very little focus on the future in this State of the Union address. The two things that I would say that he did focus on in the future would be immigration reform. That's the next thing on his plate mm-hmm. in 2018. And infrastructure. Those were the two things that I came away with.
Sure.
That he said these are the things that we're going to be looking at in 2018. It is also an election year, midterm elections. So I think it's kind of taking it easy.
Here's what mystifies – this is one thing that mystifies me, not about President Trump. This is one of the – you know, if we're being fair, this is one of the areas where I totally back him up on. And that is, we need to spend a crap ton of money on infrastructure, repairing roads and bridges, and generally – and so his $1.5 trillion proposed infrastructure bill I think is the right thing to propose. It's not going to pass because nobody – no Congress in an even numbered year spends $1.5 trillion on anything. What mystifies me is the fiscal conservatives, not these social conservatives, but the fiscal conservatives who are turning up their nose at the idea of repairing and replacing infrastructure. Costs too much money. I mean, do you want to be driving over the bridge when it collapses? I don't understand.
Oh, absolutely not. But they also just passed tax reform. They just passed a massive tax cut.
Massive.
So there's not money for it.
Well, there wasn't money for the tax cut either.
Right. No, there wasn't money for the, and so now we have even less, and we're talking about $1.5 trillion
sure.
For infrastructure repair, which is absolutely needed.
Mm-hmm.
Both Republicans and Democrats can get on board with the fact that our roads are crumbling and we need to get those fixed. It's not a very divisive issue like, say, immigration reform is,
yeah.
right? And we'll talk about that in a little bit. But the question I think for both sides is, where's the money going to come from?
Taxes.
Where's the money going
to
come from?
We're going to have to raise taxes.
Right.
I
think that
I said that before the text.
Was it $1.5 trillion that he
yep.
Okay, because I thought that I was under the impression that it was $600 million, and they were depending on the rest coming from the states. That was my impression. on the infrastructure. But I can we'll come back to infrastructure towards the end of this.
$600 billion? Because $600 million?
$600 billion, yes. Sorry.
Yeah, because $600 million is basically one stadium.
I've been on ice for 30 frickin' years. Throw me a frickin' bone here.
Yeah.
so $1 million.
Sure.
So yeah, I think it's $600 billion. Let me look up infrastructure. Whoop, there we go. I'll look that up a little bit later. Anyway,
sure.
So yeah, I thought it was $600 billion, and the rest was going to be offset by the states.
Okay,
but if it's $1.5 trillion, that's a whole other thing entirely.
Well, it may be a $900 billion from the states, $600 billion from the feds. The total amount of money that should be spent, they're saying, is $1.5 trillion.
Okay.
Which, as any civil engineer or city planner will tell you, is not enough. But it'll help.
Yeah. I mean, Detroit needs it.
Sure.
I mean, heck, just driving from my house to here was a nightmare.
As somebody who has, in the last 18 months, ridden Amtrak 3 times, yeah, we can use an upgrade.
And you are right. Trump seeks bipartisan support for $1.5 trillion infrastructure plan. The problem is we don't have the money for it.
Nope. Or the bipartisanship.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think you have the bipartisan.
We could get it passed.
Yeah, I think you have everybody on both sides going, yeah, we need that. No, we can't afford that. Right?
So it's not a matter of the vote failing. It's there's not going to be a vote.
Yeah. And it's not going to make it out of committee.
No. Nope.
It's like going, hey, you know what? We need a new fridge, honey, but we can't afford a new fridge right now. So we're going to wait till the fridge fails or we absolutely it's on its last legs. Then we will get it.
Except in this analogy, the fridge failing does not mean $200 in food spoils. It means that a lot of people die. So, I mean,
that's a possibility. Okay. Maybe it's a poor analogy. Nobody dies with fridge dying.
No, it's a good analogy.
I could get botulism, Kent.
Right.
I don't think you're thinking about this. You haven't thought this through. But yeah, so $1.5 trillion in infrastructure, but we don't have the money for it. So, now, I looked up his PolitiFact scorecard, and out of 509 statements made from his candidacy to now, so up
to. Let me give an over under. 6 were true.
Oh, of the State of the Union? I didn't even go with specifically the State of the Union.
Oh, okay. All right. Go ahead.
But I will get to some of that. So 69% of what he has said has either been mostly false, false, or an outright lie.
Okay.
Since being a candidate to now.
Yep.
That's not talking about just the State of the Union address. We're just talking about everything.
Starting with Mexicans and rapists.
Yeah. So
up to now. Yeah.
So Trump comes out, you know, President of the United States comes up, claps. He clapped for himself a lot. That was interesting. I haven't seen a president do that very often.
No.
I'd have to look back and see footage if a president, while they are being clapped for, steps back and actually starts clapping themselves.
Nope. Just Donald Trump and Chuck Barris, the host of the Gong Show.
So he noted Puerto Rico. Obviously, he didn't talk much about Puerto Rico. But at the very beginning, he knows Puerto Rico. And then this morning, FEMA removed funding for supplies.
Sure.
So that's fun.
As they do.
But he steps up to the microphone, says, ladies and gentlemen, the state of our union is strong because our people are strong. He gets a standing ovation from Republicans.
Did PolitiFact write that as mostly false?
No. I'm just saying what happened there.
Because that is mostly false.
I do want to take a couple things here. So some things that he said, 2.4 million new jobs, including 200,000 new jobs in manufacturing alone. It's one of the things that he boasted about.
Let's stop right there for a second. 2.4 – here's the quote. Since the election, we have created 2.4 million new jobs, including 200,000 new jobs in manufacturing alone, which is great, except that it's the worst year of the last 6.
True.
All 5 of the previous 5 years under Obama, who oversaw this terrible floundering economy we have to get rid of the Democrats for, all 5 of the last 5 years were better than this. So while that's a true statement on its face,
it's not true. More than 500,000 of those jobs created were under President Obama.
Okay.
So, I mean, he came in and took 500,000 jobs that belonged to Obama, if you're going to give credit to somebody, and added it to his 2.4 million jobs. Now, that's not to say that the other jobs didn't happen under his presidency. And you can't say there's not necessarily a Trump effect. So I think the company saw the writing on the wall. Trump has won.
There's a Trump effect.
We can do some hiring now. We can hire some people. But under President Obama, at least 500,000 of those jobs were created under his presidency. It was after the election happened. So the question then is, did those companies hire because Donald Trump was about to become president? It's going to be a whole new ball game now that Obama's on his way out. But the fact of the matter is, Obama was president when 500,000 of those jobs
were created. Here's what I'm saying. I'm not sure that we connected on that. There have been since January 20th, mm-hmm. 2017, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, 1.8 million jobs created from January 20th to today, which is like 375 days. That's the slowest rate of job growth since 2010. Okay. If there's a Trump effect, it's to slow down hiring.
Okay.
So that's not
an accomplishment. You got to take into effect that tax cut, which we'll get to in a little bit.
Sure.
Wage stagnation is at an all-time low. We're finally seeing rising wages. Fact check that. Wages were already rising at the end of the Obama administration. They've been rising generally since the 90s, despite even having a recession. A mini recession and then an actual recession. Wages have been on the rise generally since the 90s, and they were already rising at the end of the Obama administration.
I can't wait till we get to black unemployment.
Yeah, did you see the? Oh my gosh, their faces. Unemployment claims have hit a 45-year low. That is true. Whether you can take credit for it or not, that is true. He has been a president for at least a year. So, 44 of those years had nothing to do with him. One of those years might. African American and Hispanic unemployment rate stands at the lowest rate
here.
Ever, right? This is true.
Yep.
It is actually true. But the problem with taking credit for this is that, unemployment rates among African American and Hispanic population have been on the decline for the last 7 years.
Funny you should say that, because every day I listen to at least part of the world's worst radio show, and the host continues to say, "What about black unemployment? Black unemployment is at its lowest ever." When Barack Obama took office, and granted, it was a bad time for the economy. When Barack Obama took office, black unemployment was pushing 17%. It then fell during his presidency to like 8.5%, and now it's just below 8%. You don't get to take credit for the last lap.
Right.
Somebody else ran the entire race.
Yeah. So I don't need even guess who that horrible radio host is. Oh. I may or may not have debated him on his show a few days ago, calling in.
Could be.
Additionally, the Hispanic rate of unemployment currently matches the unemployment rate of Hispanics in 2006. So it's not the lowest rate ever. At least not for Hispanics. It's reached pretty much where it's been before.
Okay.
So if the 2006 was the lowest rate ever and 2018 is the lowest rate, it's tied.
Yeah.
It's a tie. Small business confidence is at an all-time high. As a matter of fact, one of the guests, Steve Staub and his business partner, I didn't get his first name, but his last name is Keplinger. They were guests at the State of the Union. Donald Trump pointed them out. He said this small business owner has seen their best year in 20 years, hiring 14 new people and expanding into the building next door.
Good for Steve.
They had one of their employees there, a black employee, by the way, who was a welder. And Trump said he's a good welder. I'm told he's a good welder.
I can't get too cynical about the parade of minorities in uniforms that Donald Trump invited to the State of the Union.
No, absolutely not.
Because Obama did the same thing.
Right.
You bring people who look like heroes to the State of the Union.
Right.
Fine.
And I'm not even going to question whether they are heroes or not. I'm going to say they are, right?
Sure.
Skilled trades. I mean, he's touting business growth. He's touting this young man who's a welder that's skilled trades right there, which in Detroit is a big deal right now. We're talking about, opening up skilled trade schools so a lot of people can actually get into some of these construction jobs for all these projects that are going on here in the city of Detroit with our rebuilding. So that's a good thing. And it was true. I can't remember where I looked, but Small businesses are more confident than ever. More small businesses are opening up. I am a small business owner. So I've got a little bit more confidence in the current milieu in terms of dealing with other small business owners. Right? There's kind of a general air of a sigh of relief. We can get this done. We can get this done together. So it's true, right? So what's happening on a large scale with large businesses, there's a lot of confidence there, is happening on a small business level as well. So, they also repealed the core of Obamacare. The individual mandate is now gone. That's true. What do you think of that?
I think it's the part of Obamacare that makes it work. And I don't know why they gave a standing ovation to something that within 18 months is going to cause premiums to rise 20%.
Interesting. Okay. All right.
So.
All I knew – see, and I didn't know that.
Yep.
This is where people need to be informed, right? And I'm saying I was uninformed on that until just now. I remember when the individual mandate came down. If I understand what the individual mandate was, is you had to get insurance or you would be fined.
You do.
Correct? Okay.
Yes.
All right. So for me, that was detrimental when it came out.
Sure.
I didn't have the money for it, so I just took the fine.
Okay.
Right? And there are a lot of people who cannot afford it, who now have to have it. Who have to pay a fine, and each year they don't pay the insurance, the fine gets higher.
And of course, the downside to the fine is, aside from the fine, you still don't.
You still have no insurance, right? And so, but many people just kind of live that way, right?
Yep.
Hey, you know, if it comes between giving my kids food on the table or paying for insurance that we're going to very, very rarely use, even though we can go to the emergency room and they can just bill us, they're still going to serve us, right?
Sure.
That's a no-brainer for people who don't have any money.
Right? I guess,
I'm going to feed my kids. So the individual mandate was really hard for a lot of people.
Now, the government, I mean, the
individual mandate. I get the point of it.
Right.
But
the government, when you talk about, well, just go to the ER and pay ER rates, which the hospitals can't collect, and the government underwrites that, driving insurance prices higher for everybody. Medical debt. Doesn't count against your credit in the same way. Like if you go to get a house or a credit card, it's kind of assumed that it's uncollectible. So there's no incentive,
right,
to do things the smart way, I guess.
Yeah. You know? It brings into question. I mean, we should probably do a full episode or a series on the state of medical care in the United States anyway, because
sure.
A lot of these hospitals are running it like businesses. You know, the high price of medicine, the high cost of insurance for the doctors against malpractice suits and all these kinds of things. All of this comes down on the consumer, just like any other product, right? Hey, you know what? We are going to raise the taxes for a company. Oh, you're going to raise the taxes on the company? We're going to offset that by raising the prices on our goods, and, you know, the people buying them are going to have to pay that. Same thing with this. And so for me, when that individual mandate came out, I remember having a conversation. What the fuck are we going to do?
Right.
What are we going to do with this? And we took the hit. Now we're at a place where we're making a little bit more money and we now have insurance, and it's great because, you know, I can go to the hospital. Remember last year when I had the abscess tooth and I was, you know, an atheist for a week? You know, now I don't have to go through that again. I can just stay a Christian.
Great.
So thanks, Obama. Or I guess thanks, Trump on that one. I don't know. But either way, I guess we're kind of at a loggerheads on that. For me, I just felt like the individual mandate was a bad thing. But you're saying what it's going to do in 20 months from now is
real quick on the individual mandate. The point of Obamacare was, all right. So there was an upside and a downside. The upside for the consumer of the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare was. Or the most publicized aspect of it was to eliminate the discrimination against those with pre-existing conditions. You can, for a certain open enrollment period every year, sign up for insurance, and the fact that you have cancer on your record, or frankly, have cancer now, or that you are diabetic, or that you have lupus, you can still get insurance, whereas before that, you couldn't.
Right.
The only way to pay for that is to mandate
that everybody
that
get insurance.
People who don't have lupus and cancer and diabetes get insurance.
Because that's how insurance works.
That's how insurance works.
So when you crash your car,
right.
The fact that everybody's paying into car insurance is what's going to take care of your car getting fixed.
So now what we have is a situation where the insurance companies must cover at the same rate diabetics and cancer patients and lupus and go on, but everybody doesn't have to get insurance. You can see what that will do to rates. So it was a two-legged stool balancing precariously on two legs, and we cut one off.
Okay. All right. Well, you may have just changed my perspective on that. I'll have to do some more research. But I guess – no, I mean, you've definitely changed my perspective. I guess pragmatically, most people are thinking about what's in my bank account now.
Right.
I don't care about it. I don't care about it going up for everybody else. What's in my bank account now? And so I think that's how people approach it.
The conspiracy theory, if it's – I mean, that may be overstating it, was that Obamacare was designed to fail to usher us into single-payer health care, Medicare for all. That's another episode. But Medicare –
which you would be hosting because I don't even know the questions to ask.
Medicare is a far more efficient system than because it takes the profit motive because the government's not making money on Medicare policies. They're doing their best to break even.
Okay.
And so –
kind of like Amtrak?
You don't have – Amtrak loses money hand over fist. So you don't have to look out for investors and you don't have to pay dividends. That's it.
Okay. So let's talk about those tax cut bonuses from large companies. You mentioned that as well. Gave tax cuts to large companies, which increased hiring. A lot of these companies were handing out $1,000 bonuses. This is true. He gave large tax cuts to corporations. The only problem is a lot of those companies, while handing out those $1,000 bonuses, simultaneously cut thousands of jobs. Mm-hmm. Comcast is one of them. My uncle works for Comcast. He was one of the lucky few. Mm-hmm. He was telling me. I thought he was like letting me know that he was one of the people who just got fired. And he's like, oh hell no. They're not letting my department go. My uncle is like one of the best sales guys in all of Comcast.
Oh, okay.
He said they let a lot of people go. Gave him a $1,000 bonus, and that was kind of your goodbye. He's like, they gave you a little nice package. I think took care of you for like a couple months.
Okay.
But a lot of people – and it was right before Christmas – That happened with Comcast. AT&T also fired a lot of people. Walmart, I believe that they are shutting down a bunch of Sam's Clubs. Matter of fact, my wife and I shop at Sam's Club.
You do, and I know that because you once sent me to Costco. sent me to Costco with a deal that you'd gotten at Sam's Club, and that was a long, fruitless search.
I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I thought that was checking out. Phone. Okay,
it
all right.
Was, yeah.
So it wasn't a deal. If you were a Sam's Club member, you can check out on your phone rather than stand in line like cattle.
It's great.
Yeah, it's fantastic. But they're closing a lot of Sam's Clubs. Thankfully, they're not closing any of the ones near us. But they are still closing like 63 of them. And if you go into one Sam's Club, there are hundreds of people that work at a Sam's Club. Mm-hmm. And so as far as I understand, those people are being laid off. They are not being hired. I mean, they have first come, first serve of being hired into a Walmart mm-hmm. or another Sam's Club. But many of them are in areas where there's not another Sam's Club within 30, 40 miles.
Sure. If you lose your job at Sam's Club, I mean, they will hire you at Walmart. But you know what Walmart already has is employees.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. So I hear management's okay, but the hoi polloi are not. So ExxonMobil announced a $50 billion investment in the United States, and a bunch of other companies as well. Apple, some of the auto industry are also opening up factories here in the United States. Trump said that the auto industry hadn't opened up any in many, many years. I think they've opened up two in the last 9 years, two factories, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. But plans for most of the companies were several years in the making. Now, obviously, Trump becoming president has given these companies more confidence. We can't deny that Trump effect. But a lot of these plans were already in the making, you know, as far back as Obama, as far back as George W. Bush. So you can't – when you're looking at a ship like the size of General Motors, you can't turn that ship quickly, right? It takes miles to turn a large ship. Same thing with GM. You can't just – announce on Tuesday you're going to open a factory and on Friday it's working. Mm-hmm. It's just not the case. It's a long plan that was in place before Trump was even running.
Yeah.
So, what are some of your thoughts? I mean, we haven't even gotten to flag stuff. We haven't even gotten to.
I'm looking at I'm looking at this list, and we can we're gonna take a break for a second, and then come back for another 15 minutes of this or so. I do find though that as I look at this list, trying to fact check Donald Trump is in a way like being dropped at the corner of 34th and 5th in New York City, which is the address of the Empire State Building. And they give you a chisel and a hammer, and they say, bring that building down. Just start chiseling. That's what fact-checking the speech is like. You can parse every word of it. You can say, well, this is wrong and this is wrong. And here's the thing. It doesn't make a difference. Nobody cares.
Speaking of fact-checking, and we'll take a break after this, he said, hey, the Empire State Building, built in less than a year. Let's fact-check that. 1 year, 45 days to build. So auto manufacturers coming back. He talks about clean coal. We're now an exporter of energy to the world.
Just one thing. We're not going to fact check everything, but we will fact check this. Clean coal does not exist.
Correct.
There's no such thing as clean coal.
Beautiful clean coal.
Clean coal is not a thing. What is a thing?
Have you ever seen a coal miner, Trump?
Nope. Yes. Sure. There's just coal. There's one kind of coal, and it's anthracite, and it crystallized anthracite, and it is the carbon can be captured through technology. Which renders the process not as bad. It is not clean, nor is there anything different about the coal.
Okay. One thing I did like about the speech, he talked about reforming our prisons, helping former inmates who have served their time get a second chance at life. Now, I don't know how that's done at the federal level. He did not give any plans for that, but we do need prison reform.
Can you guess why? He didn't
because
present any plan.
There's actually no plan.
There's no plan.
But the fact that he stated there is a need.
Sure.
That's a win for me. I respected that. Now, hopefully the plan comes to fruition. They create a plan and they execute the plan and get that going. But then let's talk about flags and let's talk about DACA. Right?
Yep.
And let's talk about the wall. So talk about the flag first. He made the statement about... I mean, he points out this little kid, Preston. He's sitting right next to Melania, who came separate. Let's talk about Melania coming separate at first.
All right.
Apparently, breaking from tradition, normally the First Lady shows up with the president, but just prior to the State of the Union, a few days prior, there was an announcement or revelation that people in Trump's campaign had paid a former porn actress.
Is she former?
I don't know if she's current.
I don't know.
Either way, they paid her, I think, $130,000 to not reveal an affair that she had had with the president.
Yes.
And so when Donald Trump mentions family values, we are a country that believes in God we trust and family values, he got a standing ovation from everyone except for Melania.
I did not notice that.
Which was really interesting. So affair revealed. Although I don't know how mad she could be given that she was the mistress on his second wife, who was a mistress on his first wife. What did you think he was going to do? But either way.
You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of, and you'll be surprised that I go here. Did you ever see a movie? It's a very white movie. I don't know if you would have seen it.
I see a lot of white movies.
It was a movie.
That's most of them, by the way.
Maybe like 20 years ago.
Okay.
Starring Julia Roberts, Dennis Quaid, and Kira Sedgwick, called Something to Talk About.
I do vaguely remember seeing it. I worked at a movie theater when it came out.
Oh, okay. So. Somebody noticed that Julia Roberts and Kira Sedgwick have the same mouth and cast them as sisters. And I believe it was Julia Roberts who was married to Dennis Quaid, and the
movie is she still married to Dennis Quaid?
No. Okay. In the movie.
Oh, in the movie.
Married to Dennis Quaid. Who she finds out is cheating on her. Mm-hmm. Now the movie is named after the old song Let's Give Them Something to Talk About, which is about an affair. So she finds out that her husband is cheating on her, and her sister, in all of her down-home homespun wisdom, says, honey, I feel bad for you, but you married a guy whose college name was Hound Dog. as if to say, where were your expectations?
Yeah, what did you think? But either way, I don't want to blame the victim. An affair against someone that you love sucks. And especially on a grand stage as, you know, the White House, right, being right. The first lady, that sucks. I mean, it sucked for Hillary Clinton. Yep. I'm sure it sucks for Melania. Now, I guess yesterday she came out and denied it. She denied
she did a live spot with Jimmy Kimmel.
Yeah, the porn actress denied the affair now. And so it's kind of going back and forth on whether it's true, whether it's not true. Most people believe she's been paid off now to say that it's not true. I don't know. That's conspiracy theories. But either way, Melania did not stand up at that point in time when everybody else was giving a standing ovation.
Yes.
So that was very, very interesting. But he points out this kid, Preston. I think he's like 11 or 12.
The whole speech, by the way, I thought was Barron Trump. The reason I thought it was Barron is because he was sitting next to Melania.
Yeah.
And he's a little blonde kid who's like 11 years old.
I thought he was at first. And I was like, oh, it's not him. He's a special guest.
Okay. Yeah.
And so I guess Preston noted that there were a lot of soldiers' graves who did not have flags on them. And he spearheaded a campaign. And now over 40,000 flags have been planted or posted at fallen soldiers' graves.
Good for Preston.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic. Now, this was kind of the segue, though, into we should stand for the flag. There's a reason why we put our hand over our heart. And without directly naming the NFL,
right?
Trump definitely directly alludes to the NFL and the protests by NFL players spearheaded by Colin Kaepernick.
Sure. We stand for the flag.
We stand for the flag, right? And so that was kind of a swipe. I thought it was I get it, pandering to your base, but I felt it was – I thought it was divisive.
I thought it was. When he says, you know, in America, we put our hands over our hearts and we stand for the flag, standing ovation. Yes, in America, we do that. We put our hands on our hearts. We stand at attention for the flag unless we are one of a very small number of people who are engaged in a very specific social justice protest. Those are the only people who don't.
And even still, saying that is, I mean, we have passed laws that say you don't have to do this, right? So in the land
have we passed laws, or is it just the First Amendment?
I'm pretty sure it's a law that says that you don't have to.
Well, I don't think there's any such thing as a law that says you don't have to do something. The First Amendment says that you can participate or not participate.
I have to look at it because there was a point where you were compelled and you could be fined if you didn't or something like that, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
So either way, the fact of the matter is, yes, okay, we stand, we put our hand over our heart. I was raised in the military. That's what I do. But I also support the protests right now, right? That's a very real thing, very real problem. And it's bringing attention to that. So it was kind of ironic that the president of the United States, the president of the land of the free and the home of the brave, is saying that you are compelled to do this thing, right? This is what we do. Right. Mm-hmm. And if you don't do this, it is un-American. That to me is almost, it smacks of McCarthyism. But, so there was that. There was that swipe. But then also the swipe at DACA recipients. So I don't know if you know, but, the Democratic, you know, Democratic congressmen, senators, congressmen, people that were there, many of them brought DACA recipients as their guests.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they weren't pointed out because it's not a Democratic president.
Right.
And so DACA recipients were in the audience, and many of them are called dreamers.
Yes.
And Donald Trump said Americans are dreamers too.
Yes.
Which I just felt was in very poor taste. And I know that a lot of Americans feel that way, but here's the deal. When you are a DACA recipient, everything you know, for the most part, is American. Right? You feel American to the core without having papers. So in a way, you were a second-class citizen. Right? You were treated as a second-class citizen. So it was to say that you are not American, and Americans are dreamers too. It just
right.
It just was the most divisive moment of the night for me.
You know what? I wish I could take credit for this line because I've been using it all day, and I have to admit half the time taking credit for this line, but I won't hear. And I wish I could tell you who it was that I said it, who said it that I am ripping off. That line was as if Donald Trump said, you know what the immigration debate needs is a dash of all lives matter. We need to all lives matter immigration. What can I say?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think he's really painting himself into a corner politically with the immigration debate that he's taking on in 2018. I don't know that we're going to make a lot of headway with someone that thinks the way that he does. And I get it. You have a base that you need to pander to. You have a base that you had a constituency that voted for you, and you only have, what, 18 months to really affect change as a president. So according to West Wing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just got to that episode. But I feel like he shot himself in the foot, and he's not doing anybody who's running as a Republican in the midterm elections any favors by being that divisive. And as many people as you have running in states where there are many, many Hispanic voters who feel a very specific kind of way about DACA and the need for DACA, I don't think he's doing himself any favors politically.
All you have to know about the upcoming midterm election, which is still somehow 10 months away, is that the record for the number of veteran congressmen to bail off this ship, the record has been shattered. We got another one today, Trey Gowdy from South Carolina, a mm-hmm. committee chairman who's like 48, said, "This sucks. I'm going back to I'm going to go be a prosecutor." He's not running for reelection.
Wow. So on this immigration thing, merit-based green card. One of the things that I'm going to fact check on this, he said, he talked about chain migration, where you can just bring in an unlimited number.
Oh, you're fact checking it right now.
Of your family members. You can't. You cannot do that. That's what he got actively booed. I think that was the one time he got actively booed.
Actively booed because he said unlimited numbers of extended family.
Rice.
The unlimited number.
Not rice, right.
The unlimited is technically true, but it's limited to immediate family. No, right. No cousins, no in-laws. It's siblings and children.
Right. And so he got actively booed on that one, mm-hmm. And rightly so. It was a lie. It was not true.
No.
In any way, shape, or form. And I don't know why he said it. Afterwards people said that he stayed mostly on script. So I'm wondering what was on script and what was off script.
Yep.
That seems like it might have been off script. I like to think, I want to give him the benefit of the doubt, that he's at least surrounded himself with enough smart people to not write that kind of stupidity. Right?
The speech was largely written by a wonderful gentleman named Stephen Miller. If you know anything about Stephen Miller, his nickname among people who think mostly like us is the Santa Monica Fascist. He is the single most hostile person to immigration in the government. And he wrote the State of the Union.
Okay. Well, then I stand corrected. He might have written that yeah. there. I don't know. Might have been right on script. He pointed out a Hispanic ICE agent, so that was strategic.
Sure.
Right? CJ Martinez.
Or
TJ.
DJ.
Or DJ. DJ or CJ.
He goes by DJ. Who goes by either DJ or CJ?
I don't know. Someone who has a D as a first name and a C as a middle name? Who knows?
Sure.
But either way. So CJ Martinez. And... Here's a problem again. So he's talking about DACA and without necessarily mentioning DACA. And when talking about Hispanic people and people coming across the border, of course, he alludes to the MS-13 gang members.
Sure.
He points out a family who lost their daughters to, you know, essentially gang violence. And the idea is had they not come in illegally, their daughters would still be alive.
Sure.
Probably true, but...
MS-13 got a massive publicity boost
last
night.
Yeah, I never heard of him.
Oh, you never had?
I never heard of him.
Oh, MS-13 has been all the rage on in right-wing talk radio. And, you know, if Breitbart and the Daily Caller and their ilk are to be believed and absorbed, MS-13 is roughly equivalent to what we grew up thinking of Cobra. Cobra,
like G.I. Joe Cobra?
They have unlimited numbers of soldiers willing to die for the cause and unlimited budget.
They don't die. Their planes blow up and they parachute out to do evil on another day.
Laser beams never hit anything.
Right.
Yeah.
So
MS-13 has hundreds and hundreds of thousands of soldiers ready to rape your daughters. And they are just around the corner.
Yeah. And I mean, I had never heard of them. So, but apparently they're a huge problem. And I guess they're big in New Jersey and LA and maybe along border towns. I don't know.
Sure.
But either way, it painted Hispanics coming across the border as criminals rather than like many of them who were coming across. They are escaping poverty. Mm-hmm. They are going to the land of opportunity, just like our ancestors came to the land of opportunity. Now, obviously, we're a nation of laws, and immigration is not easy. There are good stories and there are bad stories. But to paint the 800,000 just DACA is it 800,000 DACA recipients?
Yeah.
Okay, it's just DACA recipients. We're not even talking about the other immigrants. It's what, 11 million?
And people are not eligible for DACA if they have any criminal record.
Right. And so you've got, I want to say, 11 million immigrants, 11 or 12 million immigrants in the United States, illegal. Mm-hmm. Illegal immigrants, undocumented workers, however you want to refer to them, right? And I understand the political ways that we refer to them in both ways. But it just criminalized them in their mind. There was one hardworking ICE agent, right, taking out illegals.
It's just that guy.
But the rest of them are criminals, yep. Right? This is the good one. This is the good one.
One
here.
Of the good ones,
right? Yeah. That's how I felt about the hard worker, the welder. Like, that's a good guy, and he needed black parents whose daughters had been killed by Hispanic people to say. Mm-hmm. It just all smacked of politics. But the fact of the matter is, their daughters were killed. The fact of the matter is, MS-13 is apparently a problem.
Yep.
But it just seemed like it criminalized Hispanic people. It definitely criminalized Hispanic people.
You know, the debate over merit-based education, I do
– and that merit is you are coming from a predominantly white country.
Sure. Or, you know, somehow you're from Guyana and have a doctoral degree or an MD or you're a lawyer. I'm sure that would be considered merit. But the problem with merit-based education – and it is defended
by education or immigration, merit-based immigration.
Sure, that too. Merit-based immigration. The problem with merit-based immigration is that it is defended by those people who say that, well, look at all the countries in the world that have it. Canada has merit-based immigration. Germany, the UK, France, Mexico, they all have merit-based immigration. The problem with that, at the risk of getting too idealistic and weepy, is the thesis statement of America is I came from nothing and built something here. That's not true of those other countries. All props to those other countries. Love to visit you one day. But that's not what they're about.
Yeah. So overall, State of the Union, message to his base, not a lot of legislative victories. Obviously, his base thinks he's had some. And from everything I read on Fox News, it was a win. It was a slam dunk.
Sure.
He looked presidential, right? He spoke in complete sentences. This was a win. This was a win for him. I think by and large, most every other news outlet said this was par for the course for Donald Trump, but not necessarily a win. But we will see what happens in this midterm election season.
Mm-hmm.
There were 5 Democratic responses. The main one was from Joe Kennedy. A lot of people memed him because I guess he did.
Who, by the way, looks terrific for having been FDR's ambassador to Great Britain. He is.
Joe Kennedy the third.
Oh, Joe Kennedy the
yes,
third.
Thank you
okay.
for that. Joe Kennedy
because
the third. You knew what I meant. Thank you for
Joseph
that.
Joseph P. Kennedy died in like 1968.
That's great.
Okay.
But
Joseph P. Kennedy was Joe Kennedy the third's. Great grandfather.
Okay,
sure.
Okay. So this is JFK's great nephew.
Yes.
And
is it great nephew or grand nephew?
Great nephew, from what I read.
No, those are the same thing. Great okay. nephew and okay. grand nephew. And I'm wondering which one do
it's,
you.
It's great nephew.
Okay.
Yes. So at least according to the headlines, nobody used grand nephew. Everybody said great.
Right, nephew. But you understand those are the same thing.
Yes.
I just wonder why some people say grand, some people say.
I've never heard it be called grand.
Grandfather.
Yes, grandfather, never grand nephew. Okay. I've never heard that.
Oh, you never have?
Nope. Great nephew. That's all I've heard.
Okay.
But either way, he gave the official Democratic response.
Yes.
Which obviously well-received among Democrats.
Save for?
Who essentially have no power right now.
No.
I think it was...
But seemingly an endless supply of chapstick.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
But it was a way of getting him out front. People are talking about him possibly running down the way.
Yep.
In the past, I believe people who have given the response to the State of the Union have actually been have run for president and won.
Okay, so there have been some notable responses. I don't know of one that's become president. Some have gone better than others. Marco Rubio a few years back did a State of the Union response in which he hilariously paused his speech to lunge off camera for a bottle of water to quench his thirst during the speech. That is not why he lost the primary in 2016, but that is something that people remember about him. Bobby Jindal, then governor of Louisiana, was thought to be a fast-rising young minority. He's an Indian American. He was thought to be
Jindal?
Bobby Jindal?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he was thought to be a real player in presidential politics. But when he came out and he gave that speech, the one comparison that was made over and over again was Kenneth the Page from 30 Rock.
Okay.
Did not do well. There have been a couple others.
The only one who did was Ford.
Gerald Ford?
Gerald Ford.
Yep. So that's before – yeah, that was before I was born.
Yeah.
And definitely you. Now, notably, Virginia Governor Bob McDonnell gave it during the Obama administration, and he – followed that up by almost immediately going to prison. It's happened a couple of State of the Union responders have gone to prison.
Okay.
So, you know.
But none of them have gone. Well, only one of them has gone to
Gerald Ford,
to the White House. Well, that's our special episode. I think there's really no way to kind of land this plane. It was interesting. We're going to do this again next year at the next State of the Union. We'll see where Donald Trump is in a year if he's still president.
And who knows who's going to give it?
We will. Yeah. Who knows? It could be President Pence by then.
Yep.
Who knows? But either way, this is our first State of the Union special, and hopefully it will not be our last, because either Donald Trump will still be president, President Pence will be president, or the world will not be here anymore.
Sure.
So those are all three very real options for the 2019 State of the Union special. So thanks so much for listening. We'll see you soon.